Parsha told us leads us from Yitzchak, the middle Av, to the story of Yaakov, of course in the beginning Yaakov with Esav, and our first description of Yaakov is to be found in the beginning of the Parsha, Perek Kafhei, Pasuk Kaf Zayin, and it is the well-known Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Aholim. Vayigdalu Hana'orim, as the children grew up, Vayiyesav Isha Deyatzayit, Ishtadeh, he was a hunter, a man of the field, Vayakov Ishtam Yoshev Aholim. Yaakov is more simple, or more correctly, wholesome. Yoshev Aholim. What exactly is the meaning of Yoshev Aholim? He sits in tents. How is that a description of Yaakov? As we know, from Rashi, these aholim are very specific tents. Ohalo shel shem, the ohalo shel aver. What we call the yeshiva of shem ve'aver, I guess they weren't the only yeshiva waiting for a building. So they're sitting in tents, and that's ohalo shel Torah, ohalo shel shem ve'ohalo shel aver. And what was Yaakov doing? Well, we can only imagine, and our intuition tells us he was learning. Which, of course, is correct. But there is another facet of Yaakov's presence in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever, which is to be found in the writings of the Sephorno, in the beginning of Perek Kaf Vav. For Perek Kaf Vav begins with a famine, and Yitzchak is looking to go down to Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him not to go down to Mitzrayim, rather to stay. He's an Ola Tamima, Rashi tells us. He can't ever go to Chutz La'aretz for any reason. And the Psukim read, specifically Psukim Gimel, Dalet and Hey. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Gur ba'aretz asher, Gur ba'aretz hazos, sojourn in this land, ve'eye imcha v'varachecha, I'll be with you, I'll bless you. Ki lecha, I will give you and your descendants all of these lands. I will uphold the Shavua that I gave to Avram. And the final Pasuk, which really concludes the whole message, is Ekev Asher Shema Avraham Bekoli, because Avram listened to my voice. He heeded my voice, Vayishmor Mishmarti Mitzvosai Chukosai Vosorosai, and he guarded all of my precepts. And as Rashi and Chazal and other Mefarshim explain, the breakdown of Mitzvosai Chukosai Vosorosai. It's very interesting to consider. The Sforno really highlights it. That it sounds like all these things are being promised to Yitzchak. Because Avram was a good person. Because Avram did the right thing. That's quite a thing to say. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yitzchak, I will give you all these things, and your descendants will be many, and you'll receive Eretz Yisrael, because your father did what he was meant to do. I mean, it's rather a loud inference. But Yitzchak is also, he's not deserving of a bracha in his own right. It sounds like the first instance we have of Schus Avos is yet within the Avos, whereby Hashem will fulfill his promise to Yitzchak in the Zechus of Avram. Yitzchak doesn't have his own Zechus. Says the Sephorno, of course Yitzchak has his own Zechus, but these brachos come in the merit of, or in the wake of a specific Zechus. And that Yitzchak doesn't have. To what do we refer? So these are the words, the Sephorno, of course, in typical style, terse. V'hinei, le'yitzchak tola b'schus acherim, ato with an ayin. Currently, as of the present, for Yitzchak, all of these promises are in the merit of others. And this repeats itself later on in the Perek, in Pasuk Kaf Dalet, where Hashem again appears to him and says, v'hirbesi asaracha ba'avur Avraham avdi. For the sake of Avram. And of course he's talking to Yitzchak, but for the sake of Avram. says the Sephorno. So Yitzchak is promised good things in the merit of Avram. What about Yaakov? V'lo kein amar li Yaakov. We do not find such talk when it comes to Yaakov, which of course is doubly intriguing now, because if we say that every subsequent generation needs the merits of the earlier generations, and Yitzchak needs the merits of Yaakov, pardon me, of Avram, so Yaakov should need the merit of Avram and Yitzchak. But not so. We never find it. Why? Says the Sforno, and really it needs the Sforno to say this, to be able to say this, V'zeh haya kodem shehis orer Yitzchak likro b'shem Hashem. There is an expression that we find with regards to the Avos, with Avram a great deal, and with Yitzchak, not yet. And that is Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. And Vayikra B'Shem Hashem means that he publicized awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he spread the word and drew people near, and we will find it, ultimately, with Yitzchak. We will find it at the end of Perek Kaf Vav. And finally, Pasuk Kafhei, Vayiven Sham Mizbech, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. That's the first time, this is with reference to Yitzchak, that we find this expression, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. And from that point onwards, we no longer have HaKadosh Baruch Hu promising you anything in the merit of Avram. Yitzchak now merits his own brachos. V'lo mitza'uhu od tla'os. And moreover, from a certain point of view, there are no more troubles for Yitzchak. In addition to the special brachos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him, all the strife that he has with the Plishtim, and they're filling in the wells, and they're contending with him, and we find no more of that as soon as we see the words Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. And the point of the Sforno, of course, is that we should have no doubt, and we should not feel bad in any way. Yitzchak, until this point, has been being Yitzchak Avinu, and he is of the three others. But the publicizing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the very least explicitly referred to in the Chumash, that we don't find. And these brachos are a response to that. One could almost say, when he is a bracha in that way, in that manifest way, and he spreads godliness in the world overtly and actively, that's when he gets these brachas in his own right. So Avram Avinu from the very beginning is Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, and therefore the brachas come to him. Yitzchak currently is not yet, and therefore the brachas are in the merit of Avram. Omnam. Now what about Yaakov? Now this is actually something of a chiddush, because Yaakov, we never find that it's in the merit of his fathers. It seems that he's deserving of these brachas from the very beginning. Lo tolo b'schus acherim klal. He never has his brachas dependent on anyone else. Why? Ki hu omnam minu'urov, because from his youth he was Yosheva Holim. Okay, Yosheva Holim. What was he doing there? We said, learning. The Sforno says, lilmod ulelameid da'as es ha'am. Learning and teaching. Where are you more likely to find people to teach about God and godliness than the yeshiva shem ve'eva? After they've made it to the yeshiva, they need instruction. And Yaakov is a senior instructor. Ulelameid da'as es ha'am. Bifrat ba'ole shem ve'eva. Especially in the tense of shem ve'eva. That's where all the people are waiting to be taught. Shesham olukom mavakesh Hashem b'li sofik. Anyone who's seeking after God, he finds his way to Yeshiva Shem Eber. And that's where Yaakov is. And so, we see a couple of chidushim. Number one, it's clear to the Sforno, whereas we understand, and again, this is not in any way to underestimate what it means for Yaakov Avinu to be sitting and learning. But when it comes to these brachas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to give to him, so that is in response not only to learning, but also to teaching. And it's clear to the Sforno that his time in Yeshiva Shem Eber was spent lilmod ulelamed. Moreover, this brings us, after acharei hadvarim ha'ela, after this analysis of the Sforno, comparing and contrasting Avram, Yitzchak and Yaakov, So there is a stunning insight from my uncle, Rav Kupperman, who, in addition to everything else he did, wrote the commentary on the Sforno. And he notes the following, and really is something. It's an eye-opener. The presence of Yaakov in the Yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever, which we know from Chazal, is to be found or alluded to or referred to in the words Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Aholim. And of course, by the way, the reason why, how did a tent become a yeshiva? How did Yoshev Aholim become Yeshiva Shem Ve'ever? Is Yaakov the first person to dwell in a tent? The answer is very simple. He's not the first person to dwell in a tent, but Aholim doesn't mean tent. It means tents. So why is he living in two tents? Yovol and Yuval and all of those embraces there are vi called Yoshev Ohel. A person who's a shepherd or whoever, that's Yoshev Ohel. Do you never have Yoshev Aholim? Until now. Why two? And Rashi is responding to that. Otherwise a tent would never have been understood as being a yeshiva. Because there were two tents. Because there were two yeshivas. Which is interesting. What we call the yeshiva of Shem Be'ever is actually not entirely accurate. There were two yeshivas. Already then there were two approaches. I mean they were great-grandfather and great-grandson. But each one had his own contribution. And each one had his own nuance. And his own community. Olah shel Shem v'olah shel Ever. Okay. And once we have Yaakov and Yeshiva Shem Ve'ever, then there arises the question, what was he doing there? Was he learning? Was he teaching? And the Sforno discusses it. But what's fascinating is, on the words, Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Aholim, the Sforno comments as follows. Yoshev Aholim, and he's alert instantly to the fact that it's in the plural, says the Sforno, Shnei Minei Aholim, two types of tents. How so? Ha'echad ohel ro'i, with an ayin, meaning one, the tent of shepherd. V'hasheni ohel bal yitz'an, which is a reference to a pasuk in Yeshaya. Shebo hisbonein lahakir bo'o v'nikdash b'chvodo. That was the tent that with which he communed with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and meditated, and contemplated, and became holy. So this is very interesting, because the Sforno is using the concept of Yeshiva Shem Ve'ever in another pasuk to explain how Yaakov was really like Avram from the very beginning. But the pasuk where Yeshiva Shem Ve'ever itself is identified by Chazal, quoted by Rashi, the Sforno doesn't even explain that way. So when you go back to the roots of Yeshiva Shem Ve'ever in the writings of the Sforno, you won't find it. But nonetheless, elsewhere, it is yet the basis for his interpretation of the pasuk, Al Derech HaPshat. And from here we see, says R. Kupperman, that there are two concepts, and they're not always the same. There is the Masoros of Chazal, the traditions that we have from generation to generation, from the time that it happened. And there are the Pirushim of Chazal. Now, as we know, and there is, I wonder if there is any Rishon who has not done this, when Chazal tell us in Masechet Shabbos, Daf Samach Gimel, Ein Mikra Yotze Midei Pshuto, that means that there is always room to understand and explain the Pasuk Al Derech HaPshat, notwithstanding the fact that Chazal may have explained it differently Al Derech HaDrash. But the point is, there is yet remains something to learn by explaining Al Derech HaPshat. And from that point onwards, Rishonim, very often, some more, some less, will explain the Pasuk the way that they understand it. Fully aware that Chazal have explained it differently, because the Perush of Chazal is the Perush from Chazal, but then the Rishon comes, knowing all of Chazal, and knowing everything that he knows, and with his understanding, advances or suggests a different Perush. And there is what to learn from that. Rashi does it. It's not only the Ibn Ezra. Rashi does it. Ramban does it. And the Sforno does it, of course. And they're meant to. And they understand that this is not in any way conflicting with the Peyorshin that Chazal gave, because you're meant, if you are yet qualified, and you know Chazal, and you know the Torah, to explain Al Derech HaPshat, and that continues until our times, Until the 21st century, people are advancing Perushim on Derech HaPshat, assuming that they know what they need to know in order to do that. That is to say, more than just this one pasuk in front of them and whatever it is that they thought about the night before. So, that's the Perushim of Chazal. On the other hand, Masoros of Chazal are traditions of things that happened. If they happened, there is no meaning for a person to take an approach whereby they didn't happen. Because if they did, then they did. Perushim al-Derech HaPshat are interpretations of what the Pasuk may mean. And each person can advance his interpretation. Masoros, with regards to certain events, are traditions handed down from the time. And therefore, there isn't really much meaning to have an alternative approach whereby this didn't happen, if it did. And therefore, the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Ever, in a sense, it appears in two capacities. Number one, it is an entity that existed at the time that we have from Chazal. Number two, we also have it referred to through the Perush of Chazal in the words, Yoshev HaHalim, that you see, Yaakov learned there. The Sephorno, when he looks at the word Yoshev HaHalim, does not see the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Ever, and he's entitled to explain al derech hapshat that Yoshev HaHalim means two types of tents, and one type for shepherding, and one type for contemplation. Quite so. But now, of course, we shouldn't make the mistake of saying, so that means that the Sephorno's approach to Chumash doesn't factor in yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever. Why on earth wouldn't it? If there's the Masoros of Chazal, there was the Yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever, so this foreigner doesn't see that as part of the Perush of the Pasuk here, but he may well understand that it is the basis of the Perush of a Pasuk somewhere else, because it's there, it's now a question of how you see the Pesukim. And therefore, when this foreigner looks at Yaakov and sees that Yaakov never had a bracha given to him in the schus of his parents, it's because Yaakov was teaching. And where is he teaching, says this foreigner? Yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever. And we should not superficially come to the Sephorno and say, but you never mentioned it. You didn't mention Yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever and Yoshev HaHalim. Because that, within the misgeret, within the framework of Pshuto Shel Mikra, the Sephorno did advance his own Peirush. And it didn't coincide with the Peirush of Chazal. But the reality of Yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever is there. It's Chai V'Kayam. And will be used in a later event. So that's quite an important and stimulating, I believe, insight into Masoros of Chazal, Perush of Chazal, and we will see this yet, Mir Tzashem, on many occasions, but this Sforno is a classic example. Now, in the beginning of the Parsha, so we have the first of the encounters between Yaakov and Esav, the sale of the Bechora. And let us see through the words of Rashi, get an understanding of what happened at that time. So we are in Perek Kafhei. Vayozid Yaakov, Nazid Yaakov is baking cooking the cooked dish. Vayovo Esav min Asada, Vuayef. Esav comes in. He's tired. He's worn out from all of his misdemeanors. Vayomer Esav al Yaakov, Haliteni Noman Adom Adom Azeh. Give me some of that red stuff. Ki Ayef Anochi, Alkein Kurashemo Edom. Thus, then, henceforth, he is called Edom. Now, Vayome Yaakov, Michro Chayom es Bechorosho Li. Yaakov says, okay, certainly, but tell me the Bechorah. Rashi comments, what does he mean? Why does he want the Bechorah? Lefisho Ha'avoda Bechoros. The Avoda originally was with the Bechor, Amar Yaakov. Now, biologically, Esav is the Bechor. And that's pretty much all you can say. Ein Rasha Zeh Kedai Sheyakuv LaKadosh Baruch Hu. This Rasha, he can't be the Bechor. So he's got to sell it to me. Okay. It seems that this was really the Makkeh B'Patish, in other words, Esav coming in this way, especially with everything else that we know about that day. It was the day of the Petir of Avram Avinu, and Esav isn't even there, and he doesn't care, and put it all together, and Yaakov says, this he cannot be the Bechor. It's got to be transferred. Which he does, which he proceeds to procure it from Esav. Now, we should know, there is a major discussion between the two primary commentators on Rashi, the Mizrahi and the Gur Aryeh, as to how to understand exactly what Rashi means to say. And as we will see, it will lead to different possibilities, different approaches as to what happened, what Yaakov wants, what Rashi means to say, and possibly even what the Pasuk is saying. And we'll begin at the beginning. I mean, the one to raise the questions here is the Mizrahi. Mizrahi comes first, Gur Aryeh follows. And his question is a She'ilas Tam. It couldn't be more simple. What exactly is Yaakov looking to buy? Before Matan Torah, instead of Kohanim, the Avodah was with the Bechor. What makes you a Bechor? Being born first? Says the Mizrahi, I'm wondering, aloud, and in writing, how you can buy Bechor. What does that mean? As surely as all the money in the world will not make you a Kohen, at least in the right type of shul, so it's something that you can't buy. It's based on a historical event. So you cannot say that for a plate of lentils, so you too can be the firstborn. Whoever came out first is the Bechor. You cannot purchase a historical fact. So what exactly is Yaakov looking to do? And this troubled the Mizrahi greatly. And the Mizrahi responds, in fact, should we ask the question, is it possible to purchase the Bechorah? That 5 minutes ago, Esau was the Bechor, and now Yaakov is the Bechor. Can that happen? Says the Mizrahi, no, it is impossible. It can't happen. Yaakov can never be the Bechor. But, says Mizrahi, that's not what's happening here. Yaakov is not purchasing the Bechorah. Now that's a somewhat unusual thing to say, because we always thought that he was. And the positive thing to say that he is. Says the Mizrahi, let's begin with Rashi. And not make any presumptions. Once again, the words of Rashi, on the word Bechoroscha, Lefi Sheha Avoda Bechoros. The Avodas with the Bechoros, Amar Yaakov, Ein Rosha Ze Kedai Sheyakriv LaKadosh Baruch Hu. This Rosha can't be, he's not fitting for him to, or he is not fitting to do the Avoda. And those are the final words of Rashi. Now, perhaps when we learn the Rashi, in a sense, we finish the sentence for Rashi, as if to say, Yaakov said that this Rosha is not kedai to do the Avodah, so I'll do it. So in a sense, Rashi ends off with dot, 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 and Yaakov now takes on the Avodah. Says the Mizrahi, no, everything that Rashi meant to say is in Rashi. Rashi says that Yaakov said that this Rosha does not deserve to do the Avodah. And therefore, the sum total of what Yaakov is out to do is to prevent Esau from doing the Avodah. Now, who will do the Avodah then instead? No one. The only one who can do the Avodah is the Bechor. This Bechor is terrible. He will profane the Avodah. And therefore, Yaakov, at the very least, even if he won't be the Bechor, But the Avodah should not be defiled by someone like Esav. And therefore, when Rashi concludes with the words, Ein Rosha Zeh Kedai Sheyakriv LaKadosh Baruch Hu, this Rosha doesn't deserve to do the Avodah, that's it. His goal for that day is to prevent Esav from doing the Avodah, that's all. And no one will, because the only one who could is Esav, and what Yaakov, in a sense, is looking to secure is a commitment from Esav never to do the Avodah. And Esav, of course, is only too happy to oblige. As Rashi himself says, when Esav says, Hinei Anochi Olech Lamus, as Yaakov began to open up Masechet Zvachim with him and learn a bit of the Hilchos Avodah, Esav saw that he probably wouldn't make it too far into the Avodah without being Chayav Misa of one sort or another. That's what it means. It's because it doesn't mean literally I'm going to die. Why is he going to die? What's he done? He just came in from hunting. He's hungry. No one died of hunger. Someone like Esau. If he's dying of hunger, he doesn't need lentils. He needs a drink. So he means he's only too pleased to relinquish it. But Yaakov says, but you have to swear. And he swears, but he doesn't care. And what's interesting is, and this is quite a chiddush, we haven't always looked at it that way, but we should note that sometimes the pasuk refers to the birthright, to the bechora, as bechora, with the word bechora. For example, Esav says in pasuk lamed beis, by Yomer Esav, hineh nechi alech lamus, I'm going to die, v'lama zeli bechora. Okay, why do I need bechora? Fine. And at the end of pasuk lamed dalet, vayivez Esav, es habechora. So we find sometimes the word bechora is used in abstract, the bechora, but sometimes we find it's used with a suffix, pronoun, as if to say, pardon me, the Yaakov says, Vayom Yaakov pasuk lamed aleph michrach hayom es bechorasecha li. He doesn't say es habechora. And moreover, when he sells it, it says vayimkor es bechoraso li Yaakov. Again, doesn't say es habechora. So it seems shifting. Is it the Bechora or his Bechora? And what's the difference between the two? The answer is, the Mizrahi doesn't say this, it's in my notes, I'm sure it came from somewhere, that the difference is that the word Bechora in abstract is used from Esav's point of view. How does he relate to the Bechora? But whenever you talk about him selling, it's always his Bechora, because he's not selling the Bechora, he's only selling the him being the Bechor, as if to say, that is what he's committing to, that he will not be the Bechor. And ultimately, no one will be. So that's really meduyak heitev. That whenever there's a sale, the pasuk never says he sold the bechora. He sold es bechora so. The him being the bechora, that's what he sold out on. Now, ad kan the words of the Mizrahi, and that's quite, he's raised the questions and he's responded in his way with the understanding that goes with that. That said, the Maharal in the Gur Aryeh has issues. He quotes the Mizrahi, of course, as he always does, and he contests his understanding. And the reason why is because it turns out, according to the Mizrahi, that at the end of that day there was no Bechor. Yaakov never could be, and Esav stopped being. So there was no Bechor. Says Maharal, and of course, bear in mind, all of this ultimately is a question of interpreting Rashi's words. So then there's another Rashi that we need to be aware of. And that is Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Lamed Vav, when Yaakov has taken the brachas, Esav comes in, and he maledicts Yaakov for all the terrible things he's done. Vayomer, Pasuk Lamed Vav, Perek Kaf Zayin, Hachi Karoshim or Yaakov. He's called Yaakov. It's a fitting name. Vayakveni zepa amayim. He's already deceived me twice. Es bechora si lachach. He took the bechora. Vine ato lachach birchasi. And now he took my bracha. Now, interestingly, and very tragically for Esav, he actually took a bad situation and made it worse. Because this was the point, and prior to this, Yitzchak actually didn't know that he'd sold the bechora. And he didn't tell him. For obvious reasons. If he's making himself out to be a medaktik b'mitzvahs and an observant, pious person, so then to say that he parted with the bechora out of scorn over a pot of lentils doesn't rest well with that. So he never spoke about it with Yitzhak. But it came out of his rage, in spite of himself. He said, he's always swindling me, he took my bechora. And that's the first Yitzhak heard of it. Which, of course, is very interesting, because Yitzhak had always planned to give a bracha to the bechor. And it turns out that he just did. And Rashi says, "Lama charad Yitzchak." Yitzchak was afraid when Esav came, and he thought maybe he'd done something wrong. Shema avon yesh bi shebirachti katan lefnei hagadol. I gave the bracha to the younger one, not to the bechor. I mean, it was a mistake, but maybe I did something wrong. V'shinisi seidah hayachas. Except just then, Esav starts crying. Hiskel Esav mitzayik vayakveni zeh pa'amayim. Omer lo oviv me'asa lachar. Really, twice? I mean, once, apparently is today. This is the second time? What's the first time? Me'asa lachar. Omer lo es bechorasi lachach. He took my bechora. Says Yitzchak, really? Amar bekacha isi meitzar bechorit shem avad yashura sadin. I was worried that I'd given the bracha to the one that wasn't the bechor, but now you've made me feel better because now I realize that he really was the bechor. Hachshav lebechor berachti, and that's why he concludes with the words gam baruch yihye. So he confirms the bracha. He actually was considering maybe he made a mistake, but then Esav confirms that Yaakov really is the Bechor. But the point is, according to the Gur Arye, aside from everything else that we see in Rashi, we do see that Rashi does, as a result of this day, talk about Yaakov as the Bechor. According to the Mizrahi, no one is the Bechor. But then Rashi later on says that Yitzchak said, so if you sold it, then he's the Bechor. And it really sounds, therefore, we would need to understand how the Mizrahi would answer that. Mizrahi has dozens of defenders and interpreters. So no doubt there's a literature on that. But in the meanwhile, says the Gur Arye, therefore I understand that the sale really was to purchase the Bechor, notwithstanding the Bechor Roscha, which the Gur Arye would need to deal with. He became the Bechor. But of course the question is, how? I mean, the Mizrahi's question comes back. In other words, you can't buy having been born first. It's not for sale. It can't be bought and sold. But the Gur Arye takes issue in principle here with the Mizrahi, in the sense that he understands that the concept of Bechor, we say, you know, now the Avodah is with the Kohen. Prior, back in the day, it was with the Bechor. True. But the Avodah with the Bechor is not like the Avodah with the Kohen. In other words, the Avodah with the Kohen, if you're not a Kohen, there's nothing you can do about it. The Avodah originally being with the Bechor, says the Gur Arye, was not like a Kohen. In other words, because he's the Bechor, and therefore he, in a sense, has... it naturally accrues to him, but not exclusively. Being the Bechor, being in that primary position, so naturally, as a matter of kavod, as a matter of respect and preeminence, he would naturally assume the Avodah. If he chose not to, you don't have to be Bechor to do the Avodah, it will just naturally gravitate towards him. But if the Bechor will choose to transfer the Avodah to someone else, there is no reason in the world that they could not do the Avodah. And they will be called, so to speak, the Bechor now. And that is how the Mizrahi understands what Yaakov was doing, and that's why he's called the Bechor now. So, Gur Arye, pardon me. So this is quite a machlokus, really, on this very well-known section of the Parsha, the sale of the Bechor. Regardless, however we understand it, there is a further observation of the Netziv, which is very interesting, and that is that ultimately, Esav at a certain point would come to regret this, to regret the sale of the Bechor, whatever he did. And interestingly, we may have imagined that what do you do if you're Esav and you regret something? Deny it. In other words, who was there? Him and Yaakov. It's his word against Yaakov, and to whom it may concern, he claims that it never happened. I took a shavua, and that also didn't happen. I mean, all these things can disappear if they don't suit him at a certain point. How is it that never happened? So the Netziv says, if we have a look at Pasuk Lamed, Vayomer Esav al Yaakov, Haliteini na min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. Give me some of this red stuff. Ki ayef anochi, al kein karash shemo edom. Now, these final words are actually difficult to understand because it says, Alkein Karashimo, therefore, he called his name Edom. But you have a pronoun, but you have no proper noun. So who called him Edom? Says the Netziv in the Hamek Dover, he called himself Edom. Why? Because he was so delighted with himself and so proud of himself that he had managed to offload the Bechorah onto poor, unsuspecting Yaakov, and even got a bowl of lentils in the bargain, that he couldn't stop talking about it. In fact, he spoke about it so much that his nickname became known after that episode. He became known as Red because he told the story of the red food so much, how he duped Yaakov into accepting the Bechorah for him, which means nothing to him, over the plate of red food. And at every get-together and at every party and at everything, he's telling the story of the red food again. So much so that he became known by that story. And once he became known by that story, he can't delete it. He can't undo it. Okay, so he called himself Edom, and that's Bahashgocha, because he can never deny it, because everybody knows. I mean, you told the story 1,000 times. It's interesting to consider, and there is no doubt much more behind this. The two key points, the low points really of Esau's career, he himself sealed his fate. We saw just now with the brachos, we don't know what would have happened if Esav hadn't said that he sold the Bechorah. Yitzchak, we see, was having misgivings. Maybe he did something wrong. Perhaps he would have retracted the bracha. Maybe he would have said that it's a mistake. But as soon as Esav says he took my Bechorah, so he put his foot in it. And he see, and Yaakov, and Yitzchak then says, Gam baruch yehyeh, thank you. You made me feel better. I was worried, but now you told me he's really the Bechorah. Esav did that to himself. With the sale of the Bechorah itself, the only one stopping him from denying it was himself. So in a sense, his two greatest failures collapsed under his own weight. And he was the one that supplied the Makkah B'Patish in both of them. And from that point of view, he was his own worst enemy. And I think there's a great deal to learn from that. So moving on now to the Parsha of the Brachos, there is a certain comment of Chazal that I would like to pay some attention to. And it begins with Yaakov, worrying really in front of his mother Rivka, Perek Kavzayin Pasuk Yud Beis. It will never work. She says, get the brachas, say that you're ace, you get the brachas, he says it can never work. In Perek Kavzayin Pasuk Yud Beis. I don't have the same complexion, I don't have the same makeup as Esav, and if my father feels me, which he probably will, because he's going to give me a bracha, right, so he's going to put his hands on me, so then the game will be up. So then I'll be a liar in his eyes. It will just make things worse. This can never work. And I'll only end up getting a klala instead of a bracha for trying to deceive him. Rivka says, "Vatomelo imo olai kilascha bini. Your klala is on me. Just shema bekuli velekachli. Just listen to me, and I'll we'll arrange it. It will work. Just listen to me. Ach shema bekuli. Now, interestingly, although we translate olai kilascha bini, I think." That she takes, she says, if there's a klala, it will come on me. She accepts the klala on herself. Which is a big chiddush, by the way, that she can do that. Because if Yaakov is worried that Yitzchak will curse him, it's not so clear that Rivka has the power to divert that curse to her. I mean, if Yitzchak didn't curse her, will curse Yaakov. So everything really needs to be understood very well, just how transferable all these things are. If Yitzchak thinks that he's blessing Esau, but it's really Yaakov, so who gets blessed? Apparently Yaakov. If he curses Yaakov, so Rivka can't take it, unless she can. But Unkelus actually does not interpret that way. Unkelus does not say that she says that I will bear the brunt of any curse that comes on you. No. Alai kilas chabani means, in the words of Unkelus, Alai is amar benevua. I have a nevuah. That there will be no klala. So Allah means that's on me, meaning I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. That's my problem, and it will be no problem. You will not receive a klala. Okay, so she's reassuring him. This will work. You will not be cursed. Now, she concludes by saying, Ach shma bekuli. Now the word ach is very interesting, because we know that ach is a miut. It comes to exclude or to diminish. And it sounds, as we would translate the pasuk in a simple way, she's saying, just listen to me. Ach shma bekuli. However, we should note that if we look a little bit closer, so we should be aware that there are really two words. They're sister words. They do largely the same thing. The two miyutim, the two words of exclusion. Ach and rak. And Rashi says that, kol achin v'rakin miyutim hein. Whenever you see ach or rak, it comes to exclude. Only this. But of course the question is, well, is there a difference between when you use ach and when you use rak? Are they exactly the same? They're not exactly the same. What's the difference between them? So the Mefarshim will say that the difference between them is that when you say only, when you come to diminish or to exclude, to be memayit, you can either be memayit things outside what you're speaking about, or it could be an internal miut, an internal diminishing. Rak comes to exclude everything other than what's being said. Ach actually has a connotation of an excluding something within what you're talking about. It actually comes to be memayit inside of the content, not outside. I'll give you an example just to that there should not be abstract. Ach es shabsos hetishmoru, says the Ramban. It means only, but it's a miut. And what does it come to exclude or diminish? So the Ramban says, and it's based on his opinion like this in the Mechilta, that this is the source that pikuach nefesh is doche Shabbos. Because the Torah says keep Shabbos with an ach, meaning there's a miut, and it's a miut within Shabbos, meaning keeping Shabbos itself is diminished in the face of pikuach nefesh. So you see that it doesn't come to diminish something else. Shabbos itself, the subject of the topic of the pasuk, is what's being diminished in the face of pikuach nefesh. And by the way, I believe that is what's behind the famous drasha of in Parshas Noach. When Noach leaves the teva, well, it says Vayishaer ach Noach, right? Vayishaer ach Noach b'sheri to b'teva. What does it mean? So Rashi says the simple understanding is just Noach and everyone in the teva. But then he says no. Noach was injured. Goneach with Soleya. And he took the food late to the lion and he got mauled. Where's that coming from? And whatever happened to just Noach? Except when we understand that the word ach comes to diminish something within the subject. So if the subject is Noach, then ach Noach means that Noach himself was diminished. That is to say, he was injured. That's Ach Noach. It's a miut within Noach, not outside of him. If that's true, so I'm wondering, when Rivka is looking to emphasize to Yaakov how important it is to listen, now just listen. So why does she use the word Ach, which seems almost to limit his obligation to listen to her? I would imagine that she would have said, Rak, listen. Now, listen just to me, don't listen to anyone else. Rak Shma Bekoli. But she says, ach, that's an unusual, that almost seems to be undermining to a certain degree. Because she's saying, you know, you just have to listen to me, but not always, apparently. But she wants him to listen to her. So what is there room for the ach here? Now when Yaakov says, ulai musheni avi, vayisem enav kimisateya, that's a very unusual word. Kimisateya, it's the only word, the only time it appears in the Chumash. It appears elsewhere in the Tanakh. And what does it mean? It means a trickster, it means a deceiver. But there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Rabbi Elazar, is quoted in Sanhedrin Daf Tzadik Beis, the beginning of Perek Chelek, who says, Rabbi Elazar, kol hamachlif bedibur, anyone who misrepresents himself, kilu oved avodah zarah. It's like idol worship. Why? Why does he say that? Because here it says, vayiseh ben av kimisateya. And maybe, you know, if I deceive him, I'll be in his eyes like a misateya. And elsewhere, the pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, I believe, "Heki hevel hema maase tatuim," and there it's a reference to idolaters. So you see the connection there. It's avodah zarah, and here it's also like avodah zarah. Now I have a simple question, two questions actually. Firstly, it's very interesting that Yaakov brings this up at this point, as if to say, it could be that I'll be guilty of something bordering on avodah zarah here. And therefore, I don't think it's a good idea. Let's ask the question. Let's say there was no issue of avodah zarah. Would Yaakov, yes, think it's a good idea? His mother is telling him to deceive his father. Now, it's all in a good cause, but that said, it sounds like that alone doesn't bother Yaakov. The only thing is, you know, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that, you know, if you deceive someone, it's like Avodah Zarah, so that I can't do that. But anything less than that, he has no problem. Is that true? If he's worried about doing the wrong thing, why is deceiving his father? Let's say it wasn't like Avodah Zarah. Let's say it was just good old-fashioned deceiving his father. That's also a problem. But why is that not enough? Unless it's like Avodah Zarah. And the second question here is that from the way Yaakov says it, says maybe he will feel me and then find me out, and then I'll be in his eyes as a deceiver. And that will be very bad, because that's like Avodah Zarah. So my question is, if he doesn't find Yaakov out, then Yaakov is more of a deceiver. This way, he was unsuccessful in being able to deceive. Either way, it sounds like if he finds me out, then he'll look upon me as a deceiver. And then, you know, you can't be a deceiver, because that's a terrible thing. But if he doesn't find you out, so that's worse, because then you succeeded in deceiving him, and then you're really kimitateya. But it sounds like Yaakov is more afraid of not successfully deceiving him than yes. But the more successful he is, the worse he is, and the more of a deceiver he is. So, we need to go back to the beginning, really, and ask a simple question. Namely, Rivka says you have to get the brachas at all costs, and regardless, pretty much, of what's in your way. How can she do that? How can she say that? On what basis? Why should Yaakov listen to her? It sounds like, if we put this in simple terms, it sounds like she's telling him to do the wrong thing. So why should he listen to her? Now, of course, the answer is, well, she's his mother. Which actually explains almost everything from that point onwards. But in this case, it won't help, because she is his mother, and of course, kibud aim is a tremendous thing, but she's his mother telling him to deceive his father. And therefore, it sounds like the one thing she can't really say is, when he says, I have misgivings about this, she can't say, you know, why don't you honor your parents? Because there are two parents, and one of them is telling him to deceive the other one. So, kibud aim is tricky here as the basis, because it's as much a case not to do it as yes to do it. But the Rachaim HaKodesh says that there exists a concept with regards to the institution of Nevuah, which is called Hara'as Shah. Hara'as Shah means a Navi has it within his authority to suspend a mitzvah of the Torah on a temporary basis for an overriding cause. Now, a classic example of that is Eliyahu Bahar HaKarmel. I mean, we're only aware of the stunning success of that whole encounter, Eliyahu Bahar HaKarmel. But the truth is, it involved what would otherwise be considered an Aveira from the Torah, because the Beis HaMikdash was yet standing. When the Beis HaMikdash is standing, so to offer a korban outside the Beis HaMikdash is called a boma, and it is Aser, with full Isser Torah. It's even a Chiyuv Karis. And Eliyahu said to do it. Why? Because he's a Navi. Eilav Tishma'un. For a Hara'as Shah. Now, Chazal have told us that when Avram isn't sure to send Yishmael away, Sarah said yes, he's not sure. He doesn't think it's such a good idea. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Kol Asher Tamar Elecha Sarah Shema Bekola. Listen to her voice. To her voice, not Shema Eleha, Shema Bekola. Says Rashi, her voice means Bekol Ruach HaKodesh Shaba. She was a greater Nevi'ah than him. So she has it here. And with that background, when we look now at the words Pasuk Ches, Va'ata b'ni shma b'koli. Says the Rachaim HaKodesh, in terms of mitzvah versus mitzvah, Rivka doesn't really have the authority to tell Yaakov to deceive his father. She's his mother, but Yitzchak is his father. Shema b'koli, says the Rachaim HaKodesh, means b'kol ruach HaKodesh. That is to say, she is invoking a Hara'as Shah as a Nevi'ah and suspending the mitzvah of Kibud Av. Ad Kedei Kach. which if it, and according to the Rachaim, actually, this is the first example we find of this phenomenon of a Haras Shah through a Navi. Now, once that's true, so Yaakov cannot argue against that on halachic grounds. However, the halacha does say that a Navi can uproot on a temporary basis, for good reason, any mitzvah of the Torah, and suspend any aveir of the Torah, with one notable exception, avodah zarah. He cannot tell anyone to be over to avodah zarah, even as a one-off, and even for a good reason. And so, when we come now to the Gemara, which says if a person misrepresents themselves, they're ki'ilu oved avodah zarah. Now, what does it mean, ki'ilu? We understand, of course, that's not avodah zarah in the sense that it's not the full avodah zarah. It has, shall we say, a smidgen or trace of what ultimately could lead to avodah zarah, because avodah zarah is the ultimate misrepresentation. And therefore, if a person misrepresents himself, pretends to be someone that they're not, so that's it's a trace of avodah zarah, but it's not real avodah zarah. But the ki'ilu, the question is, how severe is the ki'ilu? I think in this respect, it depends who you ask. If you ask most people, it's not really avodah zarah. But if you ask Yitzchak, it could be that it is avodah zarah. And the reason why is because the midah of Yitzchak is midas hadin. Midas hadin is allergic to even a trace of anything. Because you can't say, well, it's not really that. As soon as it has a characteristic in common, it instantly has the alarming effect as surely as the real thing itself. And therefore, we have a most unusual situation. Yaakov does not wish to be cursed by Yitzchak, which he thinks could happen. But why would it happen? Why would Yitzchak not accept that it was in a good cause that he misrepresented himself? Yitzchak wouldn't accept it, because if Yitzchak considers that he's misrepresented himself, so for Yitzchak, that's instantly avodah zarah, and there's no defense. What will you say? She's his mother, he's his father. She's a Navi, this is avodah zarah. And that's why, if Yitzchak never knows, so for everyone other than Yitzchak, it's not really avodah zarah, and ultimately can be overridden, even by a Navi. But for Yitzchak, he won't look at it that way, and he may respond with a curse. And that is why Yaakov does not stop short of comparing this case with avodah zarah. In Yitzchak's eyes, Vayisi be'enav kemisa'ateya, because that could lead to a klala. Rivka assures him that that will not happen. And if it won't happen, he doesn't have to worry. That's part of her nevuah. That's unkelus. Alai isama ben nevuah. Part of the nevuah is, don't worry, that will not happen. In which case, because it's not real avodah zarah, so therefore you need to listen to me. And she concludes with the words, ach shema bikoli. Now, of course, the word ach, we said, refers to a limitation within his obligation to listen to her. But why is she referring to that now? The answer is because he's referred to it. Yaakov has identified an area of halacha whereby he doesn't have to listen to her. If it's really avodah zarah, so therefore Rivka says, ach shema b'koli means, even with the limitation of avodah zarah, you still need to listen to me, because this is not avodah zarah proper. And even though it's ki'ilu, if Yitzchak doesn't know, then it can be suspended by a haras shah. So these nuances really give an entirely new understanding of the forces at play in this very complex section of the parsha, and it gives us also a new appreciation of the statements of Chazal, kolamakle p'diburo, everything is exactly where it needs to be, and that the more we ponder, the more we leave Beruchush Gadol. Just a final comment, which does not presume to terminate the discussion at all, but rather only to stimulate and open it. Again, we begin with a simple question. Yitzchak decides to give the brachas to Esav and not to Yaakov, and kan haben shoel, right? The basic question, how can it be, for everything that he sees in Esav, but Esav is greater than Yaakov? And that's it. He doesn't know Esav at all. He doesn't know Yaakov at all. Now Rivka sees things differently, that's for sure. But it is interesting that the way that she secures what she feels Yaakov needs is really not in the direct way. It's really through back channels. But if she has a different perspective, why doesn't she share it with Yitzhak? In other words, she does know that Yitzhak is planning to give the brachos to Esau. Why would she not go to Yitzhak and say, I don't think you should do that? In the end, it came out that her feelings on the matter came out anyway, when she sent Yaakov in posing as Esau. So Yitzhak will know. So why not discuss it with Yitzhak, if one could ask such a question? And the Netziv does. And he explains that, and this will tie into our discussion of last week, the Midah of Yitzhak is very different than the Midah of Avram. Avram is Chesed l'Avram, and the way that he goes about things and the way that he does things is all b'midas haChesed. Yitzchak, the way that he looks at the world and looks at himself, is b'midas haDin, pachad Yitzchak. And in a sense, the concept of midas haDin can pretty much be summed up in one sentence. I mean, you get what you earn, you get what you deserve. There are no free lunches. That's midas haDin. And ultimately, it's to attain perfection, but it's quite harsh, there's no help along the way, nor should there be. It's antithetical to midas haDin. So what is a bracha? A bracha is a helping hand. And therefore, says the Netziv, if we just put ourselves in the eyes of Yitzchak, if you saw someone as being in the running to succeed as an Eved Hashem, the last thing you want to do is to give them a bracha. Because you're just hampering them. You're doing them a disservice by making it easier for them. I mean, that's what Midas HaDin means. And therefore, Yitzhak knows full well, Yaakov is on level and he's on track. And for that very reason, Yitzhak does not see him as a candidate for receiving a bracha, because on the contrary, keep going with no help, and that's how you'll succeed. He could even spoil Yaakov by giving him a bracha. That's really what Midas HaDin means. Esav, on the other hand, Yitzchak sees, he's still his father, but he sees that Esav isn't really going to be the next Avram Avinu. He's not going to be the next Yitzchak. So he's not going to make it. So then in a concession, more or less representing the fact that Esav is not the one, so help him out, give him a bracha. The alternative is failure. But for Yaakov, the alternative isn't failure. He's on the path to success. And this is how Yitzchak looks at things. Rivka, on the other hand, her midah is different. As we saw, Rivka's midah is a chesed. She is the Ezer Kenegdo. But some points of Kenegdo cannot be resolved. She cannot debate the correct way to go about Avodas Hashem with Yitzchak, who is an embodiment of midah sadin, and she's an embodiment of midah chesed. Together, they build the house of Israel. But Rivka understands, not only does she understand Esav that he will only squander if not completely violate the brachas, but Yaakov needs the brachas, even if he's to succeed. And you almost have the original mitchila ola b'machshava, that Yaakov, who's the last of the avos, he will set the Jewish people on their course. And Yitzchak is b'midas hadin, only b'midas hadin, until Rivka comes, v'shita b'midas harachamim. So she has to get for Yaakov what she feels is imperative. It's pikuach nefesh for Yaakov. And even if Yaakov doesn't need help, but he's the father of the Jewish people, and the Jewish people, now and again, need help in their divine service, in their Torah living. And thus Rivka, feeling that she will fail to sway Yitzchak, who represents the antithesis to this, in direct confrontation, so there is nothing that can stand in the way of Yaakov getting the brachas, and thus she takes the route of having him take the brachos at any rate in the way that he does. And there are many further discussions and contemplations with regards to what it means for Yaakov to come in posing as Esav. Perhaps even Yitzchak understood that there's Yaakov himself maybe does need a bracha, gam baruch yehiyeh, conceding ultimately, but the initial push had to come through Rivka in her own way, come what may. And the rest is history, which is still continuing. We'll leave it over there for this evening.